This sermon was recorded at Christ Church Mission, a congregation that seeks to be a people fully alive in God's kingdom.
All right. So we're bringing the Christmas season to a close a little bit now, you know. I know that's sad for some of you. The decorations are coming down and the lights are being stored. In case you didn't know, every year I try to get my Christmas tree, we do a live tree. I try to get my Christmas tree to the drop-off lot first before any other tree is placed there. But I think my heart must have grown two sizes this year because I didn't take my Christmas tree until the day after Christmas. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm coming along, guys, you know? The joy of Christmas is filling my heart more and more every year, you know? I've never been first, but I'm bound and determined someday to beat out the Scrooge that always beats me to the lot. Is it Tom Riddle, maybe? Here we are, warring against each other. We didn't even know. Okay. As a church, we kind of stick with the Christmas story, even though Christmas is behind us. We stick with the Christmas story for one more day, and then we kind of put it away, along with our trees and wreaths and lights and such. And today we have a story about the toddler, Jesus, and a group of people searching for and finding him. It's the story of the wise men or the magi, a story that we often think of as pretty much like synonymous with Christmas, but I think that it's a powerful story that stands on its own two feet, and so we're going to dive into that today. We'll do so under three headings: searching, finding, and guiding. But I want to, before we dive into that, I want to kind of give an umbrella or a filter for us to see through all that stuff through this morning, and that is the concept of worship. Okay? So worship is a churchy word, and I just want to like get a little perspective on it because I think it has a lot to do with this passage. When we hear that word, worship, for many of us, the first thing that comes to mind is what we do for 10 to 12 minutes every Sunday when Lindsay stands up and leads music for us, when we sing praises to God, and that is certainly an aspect of our worship. But it's more of just, that's more of an outward manifestation of our worship. It's not synonymous with the idea of worship. Singing praise to God isn't synonymous with worship. I just want to remind us of that idea this morning. Some of you are not really into worship music. You know, want to know how I know? Because I see you, you know? that's right. I can see out there just like you can see up here, you know? And you know, it's okay. Like, it's all right. Some of you are just like not feeling worship music on Sunday mornings, you know? You don't like to sing. It's not your thing. I get that. It's okay. I'm always going to push you to like do more of that, to press into like our musical worship. Because I think it actually helps our hearts to worship, and because I think that's the way that Christians have historically, it's such an important way that Christians have connected with God, because I think there's something about music that kind of opens our hearts in ways that other things don't. But I want to let those of you that are not into worship music, I want to let you off the hook a little bit this morning, okay? Because worship does not equal singing. So you can still worship. In fact, you should still worship even without singing. Singing is not required. And then there's another subset of you that are like super into worship music, you know? Like, I see you too, you know? Like, eyes closed, hands raised, and I love that. Like, on a Sunday morning, there's nothing more encouraging than looking around the room and seeing people like just kind of emoting and praising God with their voices and with their hands and with their eyes. You know, that's cool. I want to say to those of you that are into that, awesome. However, what you are doing also does not equal worship. Okay? It's not all that worship involves. Okay? Here's what I'm trying to say. Being into the music doesn't give you either a pass or a fail on the worship test, okay? Being into the music does not give you a pass or fail. Worship is something that happens in here, in your hearts. Worship is an inner heart condition. It's the giving of yourself to something or to someone. And yes, it does have momentary outward expressions, but it's an inner faith and allegiance that supersedes moments of just feeling it. Those moments can inspire inner heart worship, you know, moments of like emotional singing, and inner heart worship can spill out in moments of emotional singing, but they are not one in the same. So I love talking about singing. I will probably preach sermons about how important singing praises to God is, but that is not the sermon today. Slightly different. It's about worship, the inner heart condition of giving yourself your faith and your allegiance to someone. Okay, so will you keep that in mind, that kind of umbrella concept, as we do searching, finding, and guiding, okay? Here we go, searching. So this passage is a story of the Magi, or the wise men, that are looking for Jesus. Okay, they are not three kings, as the song suggests. They weren't kings, and we don't know that if there were even three of them. The term Magi applies to a wide range of people whose practices included dream interpretation and astrology and the study of sacred writings and the pursuit of wisdom and magic. They were like spiritual mystics of no specific religion that spent their lives trying to understand the supernatural. That's who the people were that came looking for Jesus. These mystics were on a search. They were on a hunt. And it's striking when you read the story and you get like just a taste of the context, like the extent, the effort that these Magi went to in searching to find Jesus. These people went on what was probably a 40-day journey, probably with a lot of attendance in their party. And this was a real intentional pursuit. When they couldn't locate the baby themselves, they met with Herod to see if he could help. They stood before King Herod and asked him, "Do you know where is the one who was born king of the Jews?" That in and of itself was probably a very risky proposition. To stand before a seated king and say, "Hey, do you know where the real king of these people is?" It was a risk that they took. They put themselves in real danger, and then they picked up the track of the star again and followed it to Bethlehem, to the place where Jesus was. My point, I guess, is to say that they were on like a real quest to find Jesus. They were searching. Why? The passage tells us, actually. It says that they wanted to worship him. That's what they tell King Herod when they confer with him. "We are looking for him so that we can worship him." The Magi were searching. Now, you can make the case that the reason why the Magi were searching is because they were like really into like mystical religious stuff. And so this was just yet another way to like learn more about the world's religions. They were into the divine and the heavenly, and you could make the case that they were looking for this newborn king as one goes to consult a guru in your particular field of interest. You know, like this was their thing, so of course they would go looking for Jesus. But I would make a different argument. I would argue that every person that has ever lived is on a pursuit, on a search, just like the Magi were. That innate in every person is a hunger and a thirst to find what? The object of our worship. Every human being from every culture that has ever lived, in every time and every place that has existed, right down to you and me and the people that we work with and the people that we know in our actual lives, all of those people are on a search to find the object of their worship. Until they find it, they are always searching. I would make the case that that search was not unique to the Magi. It is the search that every human being is on. John Calvin famously said that the human heart is an idol factory. And it sounds like condemning, and I guess it is in a sense, but just think about it as like a claim, you know, that every human heart is just searching to find something to give their worship to. And if they can't find it out there, then they'll produce one from it within. All of our hearts are just searching for something to worship. What can I give my heart and my life to? On what can I pin my hope? On what hook can I hang my joy? Is it success in my job? Is it security in my finances? Is it the thriving of my kids? Or is it just having fun? Just like the Magi, our hearts are searching and hunting for the object of our worship. I know that's kind of like an abstract, churchy claim to make. It can be hard to wrap our minds around that truth, so I want to offer a piece of evidence. Patrick and I, our senior pastor, were talking this week, and he showed me this clip from an ESPN documentary about college football. And I thought it illustrated this point so profoundly, that every human heart is looking, searching for something to worship. Let's watch this together.
What's distinctive about college football is that its popularity is not a popularity that is arbitrary or purely a consequence of commercialism, right? It's a popularity that is a consequence of deep human need. College football is about being part of a community, being part of something that's larger than oneself. It's an institution in which religious sentiments, religious feelings can be experienced. So I went to Tuscaloosa, Baton Rouge, Athens. Every place I went, I could see examples in which people were experiencing this kind of sacred dimension. You show up to campus, which is itself a sacred space. There is the team walk through the crowd to the stadium. The band then comes soon afterwards. It's just the same game after game. That's ritual, right? It's this repeated activity that has meaning to people. You get into the stadium, which is a particularly sacred space. The field, of course, is the most sacred of spaces. The time during which the game is being played is the most sacred of times. It is about that sense of transcendence. During that football game, I will experience moments in which I transcend myself. I'm no longer self-conscious. I am so completely immersed in the moment. There's a famous anthropologist who wrote about this distinction between structure and communitas. Societies need people who are going to be doctors, people who are going to come by with the trash truck. Everybody has a role, and that's the structure. But for societies to be healthy, we need those moments where we transcend the structure and we become one with one another. Human beings have been trying to achieve that for millennia. In the past, we would describe it in specifically religious terms. Today, a lot of people don't find it in institutional religion, so they have to find it in other places. And college football is one of them. It's not just about the success of the team, it's the connection with the values that the team represents. the determination of the players.
We can't play football today, man!
Let's go!
We can't play college football! Let's go!
The loyalty that they have to the institution. The skill, the dedication that they show to their craft.
He's hurt.
And the sacrifices that they make. We often use that word and forget the fact that that's a deeply religious term, this idea of sacrifice.
I'm all right. He's all right.
And 34 down! Force the mic! Here I go!
And the fact that there is somebody on that field representing us, and they're willing to sacrifice their bodies so that we, and I do mean we can win.
Do you see it? I mean, it's like so obvious, right? I mean, it's like the way that they talk about the community and the transcendence and the rituals and even that last line. Right? What did he say? Like, that someone is on the field representing you and willing to sacrifice themselves. Like, whoa. Of course, some of you are like, can we just play that out? Let's just call it good today. And just some, I know some of you are like, turn it back on. And of course, look, I am not picking on college football or any sport. Like, nobody loves college football more than Patrick Wildman. but it's not about like me condemning college football or anything. It's about that thing that comes so naturally to us, the way that we are just hardwired to look for something that can connect us to one another and can transcend us over life circumstances, something that we can give our hearts and our hope and our lives to. So what are we worshiping? What are you worshiping? What am I worshiping? It can be tough to like identify what those things are. I think oftentimes it happens in one of two ways. One way that we can figure out what we are worshiping is that we get something that we've been pining after, you know, aka worshiping, and then we realize how truly disappointing that thing is. You know, there's this great quote Jim Carrey, the Canadian actor, said one time. He said, I wish that everybody could get rich and famous and do everything they ever dreamed of so that they can see that that's not the answer. You know, he's a person that has like gotten all the things that he was hoping for and pining for and worshiping for and realized that they are all lacking, insufficient. So that's one way we can figure out what our idols are, what we're worshiping, is that we succeed, we get the thing that we're looking for. But more often, unfortunately, the way that we can identify the things that we worship is through failure. It's not the gaining of something that reveals the idol, it's the subtraction of it from our lives, you know? Something that we had held so dear, and when we lose it, or when it's even threatened in any way, it changes our lives. Like, it changes our moods and our happiness. Like, whether that's our career or our relationships or our marriage or our finances or our politics or our morality. Like, when they're going well, we're happy, and when they're not, we're in the dumps. You know. So what is that thing? Our hearts are always longing to worship. We are searching, just like the Magi, to find something to worship. Okay, that's all searching. I'll do these last two quick, don't worry. Okay, secondly, finding. So the Magi have followed the star until it ultimately guides them right to the home of Jesus. And the text tells us that three things happen when they find Jesus, the object of their worship. It says that they are overjoyed. It says that they gave him these awesome gifts, and then that they bowed down and worshiped him. Remember that Jesus here is 2 years old, the scholars think, you know? So it's interesting to me to think about how, like, just laying eyes on a 2-year-old Jesus causes you to just, like, lay down and worship, you know? I don't know how that works, but it did. And here's what I like about what I see here. It seems obvious, at least to me, from this story of the Magi, that as learned as they were about the mysteries of the world, they probably lacked a lot of knowledge about this Jesus that stood before them. So were they knowledgeable about the ancient Jewish creation story? Maybe. Were they well-versed in the Hebrew prophecies of the coming Messiah? Probably. But did they grasp that the child in front of them was the one that would die for the sins of the entire world? That he was God himself? No, of course not. The Magi weren't able to connect all those dots, but they worshiped nonetheless. They gave their hearts and their lives, not just their minds, to Jesus Christ. And that's my hope for us at Christ Church Mission. I hope that you aren't just learning about faith here at Christ Church Mission. I hope that you are finding your heart growing in worship to Jesus. Join the Magi, not just in the search for theological information, but for meeting and worshiping the person of Jesus Christ. Our hearts are always longing to worship, and they can only find the rightful home, the rightful person in Jesus Christ. Okay, lastly, let's talk about guiding, I think I called it. Let's talk about the star. How did these Magi find Jesus? What precipitated all these events? A star. The text tells us that the Magi were following a star. There are several theories about that star. I've talked about them here before. You can go down a Wikipedia rabbit hole if you'd like. There's theories about a supernova or an alignment of different planets. It's all very interesting stuff. But I'm a bit of a mystic myself, and I tend to think that maybe the star that was present for the Magi was like truly miraculous in some way. You know, maybe it was a vision for them, or maybe it was something truly impressive that God himself put in the sky. Well, whatever it was, it directed the Magi right to the home where Jesus was. The Magi were guided to find the one true God by the star. They weren't on their own. They didn't wander aimlessly through the desert. They were guided by a star. Without the star, there would be no search, no gifts, and no worship. Now, that's not the normative way that God guides people these days and directs people to himself. The way that God has chosen to guide people now is through us, his followers, his people. Just like the star that lit the way for the Magi, we are to shine light in the darkness, helping to guide people, to steer them in the direction of the Lord and to worship what they are looking for. Jesus talks about that very idea later on in the book of Matthew. He says, "You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good deeds and glorify your God in heaven." It's our shining forth and guiding people to Jesus that will produce their glorifying and worshiping God. You are a star that guides people to God. It's intimidating, of course, but you can do this, like in your everyday life. You can seek to point people, to steer them simply in the direction of the one whom you worship. One of the very practical ways that we try to help all of us, including me, do this here at Christ Church is through this Alpha Course. Many of you have heard about the Alpha Course. It's this deal that we do like three times a year at Christ Church. And Alpha just simply directs people to Jesus. Whether they are close to him or far from him, it directs people to their ultimate place of worship. You know, I've done Alpha many, many times at this point, and I can attest that like every time that I've done it, not only have I found that my heart is growing in worship, but I'm blown away by the way that I see other people in my group and their heart growing in worship. Remember that every human heart is searching for the object of their worship. It's not like there are two kinds of people in the world, like those who are into like religion and those who aren't. Every single person is on a search for the object of their worship. Let's point them in the direction of Jesus. So yeah, if you've done Alpha before, well, let me say this. If you've never done Alpha before, I really encourage you to consider doing it. It starts later this month. Details are in your bulletin. I can't endorse it enough. Many of you have done Alpha before, and that is awesome. And some of you don't want me to try to sell you on doing Alpha again, and I get that. And so many of you are like, my life is full already, and I have, I'm in a life group, and I'm doing a lot of things. I get it. I totally get it. Here's what I'm asking you to do. If you have done Alpha before, would you consider just praying for your non-Christian friends during this season? Calling those people to mind and praying for them. And if God wants to give you an opportunity to like invite one of those people to Alpha, I'm sure you will figure out your schedule, you know? But we'd all be willing to make that sacrifice if it meant that we could actually assist in guiding a person to the true object of their worship, Jesus Christ. So, and I'm going to guide us in a little prayer time here in a minute, but I want to ask you during this week, maybe this couple of weeks, to pray for your non-Christian friends, people who you know who are still searching and have not found the right object of their worship. There's nothing magic about Alpha. It's just a great way to point people in that direction. All right. All of us are worshiping people. All of us have things competing for our worship. Our hearts are always wandering, and things always seem to be trying to crowd Jesus out of his rightful place at the center of our worship. So let's recalibrate our hearts. Today, you know, if you're like a resolution type of person, man, like let 2020 be the year that you like put Jesus more at the center of your worship. Jesus stands ready to meet us. He loves us and is desperate for all people to know him and to worship him. Our worshiping hearts can be satisfied only in him. Amen.